WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A lot of people who never paid attention to the stock market now have investments they carefully follow. And a lot of baby boomers have their retirement money tied up in mutual funds through their 401ks. What all this means for the new investors and for the stock market is the subject of a PBS Frontline documentary next Tuesday. My guests are Joe Nocera, the correspondent for the program, and Ron Chernow, a historian featured in the program. Nocera is editor-at-large at Fortune magazine and author of the book A Piece of the Action, How the Middle Class Joined the Money Class. Chernow writes about the history of banking and finance and is the author of The House of Morgan. I asked Nocera who the newcomers are in the market.
Well, it's primarily middle-class Americans. I mean, really. The stock market of the 1950s entailed maybe somewhere around 10% of the country. And they were primarily wealthy people or, you know, upper middle management types. I mean, if you were in DuPont at the upper levels of the corporation, you had stock in the corporation. What's different today is that there are more households in the stock market than there are households that own personal computers, which is an astounding fact. And it suggests something not just about the sheer numbers of people in the market, but it suggests a quantum change in the way people have come to think about the market, their money, and so on. The market used to be something to be afraid of. And now it's something that people really have come to think of as the financial vehicle that will get us through the day. That's what's really changed, and that's what we were really trying to document in the show.
Joe Nocera, your book of a couple of years ago, A Piece of the Action, was about how the middle class joined the money class. What are some of the things that have brought the middle class into the stock market?
You need to separate it out between two different things. One is the psychology that is driving people into the market, and the second are the vehicles that are enabling people to take advantage of the stock market. The psychology is fairly simple. In American life today, people feel a need to have their money grow. And so they just don't feel that they can get a decent middle-class life, and I'm thinking particularly about educating their kids in college and having enough to retire on with the money they make in their job, which is a dramatically different situation from the way people felt in the 50s during the last big bull market. And so there's this anxiety in the land that's driving people to figure out ways to make money on their money. And clearly, for the last 14 years, the best way to make money on your money is to be in the stock market. The vehicle through which this has become an attractive proposition, especially in the beginnings of the bull market, is the mutual fund. I mean, the mutual fund is actually a wonderful device that sort of suggests to you that, you know, you, an amateur, a non-professional, can turn your money over to a professional and let him do the worrying and the buying and the selling and the figuring out which companies are going to go up and so on and so forth. Of course, we've reached the point here in 1996 and 97 that there are so many mutual funds that it's actually as hard to figure out which mutual fund to be in as it used to be to figure out which stock gave you the best prospect for gain. But it was the attraction of the mutual fund, and mutual fund stars like Peter Lynch, who were sort of homey and interesting and funny, and they bought things you could understand, and they had these incredibly fabulous records, 50% up 1 year, 40% the next, that made people think, huh, I'm going to give my money to Peter Lynch, I'm going to let him make money on my money, and then, all will be well in my life.
Well, getting back to the stock market, a lot of things are changing the nature of the stock market now. One of the big things on the horizon is that this federal advisory panel has just recommended that Social Security money be invested in the market as opposed to just in Treasury bonds where it's traditionally been invested. Now, if that actually comes to pass, it would mean that between $1 and $4 trillion new dollars would be invested in the stock market. And my goodness, what are some of the things that might mean about the market?
Well, let's think about it. we begin with the mere fact that if you put $1 trillion into the market, that will drive stock prices up. I mean, that's what it will do, at least in the short term. Secondly, though, what bothers me about the idea are the potential political, what it suggests about us and where we are. If you have not just 50 million Americans invested in a bull market, but the entire political structure of the United States, everybody in the country, it seems to me that that has a tremendous potential to warp public policy, to drive public policy in such a way as to make sure that stocks don't go down. And to me, that's a classic example of the tail wagging the dog. I mean, do we really want to run our society on the basis of whether stocks keep going up? The other thing that really bothers me about this is that it again reinforces the notion that people just don't believe the stock market will go down anymore. I mean, imagine what would happen, Terry, if we entered a bear market and we had $2 trillion of the Social Security Trust Fund invested in the market. There would be hell to pay. And to me, it just reinforces the idea that we have become so caught up in this idea that this market goes up and up and up that we can't imagine any other scenario.
But let me ask you, if mutual funds are invested in the market and Social Security is invested in the market, isn't that almost a guarantee that the market stays healthy because you've got all this money just coming in? Ron Chernow, what do you think?
Well, it could also be a guarantee that the market becomes overvalued. You know, by many historic measures, the stock market is now at an all-time high. So I don't know that the government wants to provide additional artificial incentives for more cash to flow into the market. I somewhat disagree with Joe as follows. There are actually two proposals about using stocks in Social Security. One is to have the Social Security Trust Fund, which now invests exclusively in Treasury bonds, put a portion in the stock market. I think that if it was a small portion, 10%, 20%, that might provide some good diversification. I feel very differently about the proposals to convert the Social Security system into a kind of almost mandated IRA or mandated 401k plan where people are managing their Social Security money. And what disturbs me about that, Terry, is number one, there are vast differences in the skill and luck that people will have in investing their money. I think that we don't need more incentives to push up stock prices because more demand does not mean that there's more supply. It simply means that more people are buying more overpriced and overvalued stock. And then I think that Joe's point is really a good one. What happens if the baby boom generation begins to retire and there's a severe, treacherous bear market? One of two things would happen. People would either be afraid to sell their stocks and pull money out of those funds, in which case we might have tens of millions of people who are deferring consumption, which would actually deepen the recession. Or you would have people who would sell their stock in order to pay the groceries, but they would suffer an irreversible decrease in their net worth. They're retired. They would never have an opportunity to make that up again. So it would be a permanent loss to them and a permanent loss to the economy. And I fear that our policymakers in Washington are really not going through all the different scenarios that we're talking about here in terms of what the impact would be, not simply on the Social Security simply, but on the national economy. I think that Joe is right. Just as you don't want to have CEOs who manage their company for the stock price, you don't want to have a president and Federal Reserve Board chairman who manage the national economy for the stock market.
I just wanted to throw in one other thought, which has kind of occurred to me over the last couple of months, which is this, and it underlines at least the part of the Social Security proposal where you're supposed to invest for yourself. And that is, I mean, does it really make sense to create a society where your ability to live a decent life and have a good retirement depends on your ability to pick stocks or mutual funds? I mean, it seems like, to me, that seems nuts. And I'm not anti-stock market or anything like that. It just seems like that your chance at a really good life should not depend on this very arcane and difficult skill.
Right now, I think a lot of people in the middle class feel that the stock market is their only hope for retirement. A lot of people don't have the option of a guaranteed pension. And what they're offered is a 401k kind of plan in which your money is invested in the market. And so, you know, what option do you have? If you are investing a lot of your retirement money in the market, is there a safer way of, you know, a comparatively safe way of going about it?
There really isn't a safer way to grow your money. So, sure, there are safer alternatives like treasury bonds or, bond funds or less risky investment vehicles, but the trade-off always is risk for reward. So if you are in a treasury bond today, you're not going to get the 25-30% that many mutual funds have been returning, and you're certainly not going to get the, you know, even higher returns that some of these technology stocks returned the past year. People, I believe, are unsatisfied with the idea of 7% on their money.
But, you know, Terry, let me jump in here and make a point. The compounded annual return of the stock market since 1982 has been close to 15%. These are absolutely astounding returns and very, very nice for the people who are invested in the stock market. That 15% has become a kind of benchmark. It's a situation that we probably won't see again for the next 50 years. When you have people making over a 15-year period a 15% return, which is extraordinarily high by historical standards, it tends to make something like a treasury bond look very stodgy and old-fashioned. Now, if you can get, as you can get right now, 6.5% on a treasury bond, and the inflation rate is only a little over 3%, you make a very nice 3% return. And historically, this is not bad. But when the benchmark is 15%, you really look very old-fashioned and old hat sticking with the treasury bond. And so when you go through this kind of boom, one reason that people are pushed into ever more speculative returns is that their whole sense of what constitutes an acceptable return changes and is revised upward. And then they feel really foolish if they're only making 3 or 4% above the inflation rate, when historically, that's not a bad rate.
Ron Chernow and Joe Nocera are my guests. Joe Nocera is correspondent for a PBS Frontline documentary that will be broadcast Tuesday, January 14th. It's called Betting on the Market. Ron Chernow is a historian interviewed in the program and is the author of the book The House of Morgan. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about the market, the middle class's investment in the market, and how the market has been changing. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Joe Nocera and Ron Chernow. Joe Nocera is correspondent for a PBS Frontline documentary that's going to be broadcast Tuesday, January 14th, called Betting on the Market, about the middle class's growing investment in the stock market. Ron Chernow is a guest expert on the program. He's a historian of the stock market and author of the books The House of Morgan and The Warburgs. Ron Chernow, you're a historian of the stock market, and you say that, you know, the American view of the market has really changed. Early on, you say the stock market was seen as a place for swindlers. What was the image of the stock market early on?
Oh, the stock market was seen as this rather racy and wicked place, and it was mostly urban sophisticates. It was a market that was dominated by professional speculators, and those average Americans who felt that the stock market was a game that was rigged against them were correct. This was before the securities laws of the 1930s, so people were trading on inside information. Back in the 1920s, there were over 100 stocks that were openly manipulated in stock pools, and so the little people were generally lambs led to the slaughter. They would get drawn into the stock market in a kind of opportunistic way. There would be a boom. There would be a lot of chatter about stocks. They would begin to invest. They would make money for a while, and then they would always be the last people to head for the exits behind the speculators. This has really changed. It's become so deep and institutionalized and pervasive now that it's very difficult for us to realize the way the stock market was perceived earlier in the century.
What was the impact of the crash of 1929 on investing philosophy and on who invested?
Oh, the 1929 crash scared away an entire generation of investors. You know, and you have to realize now it seems like every year the stock market jumps another 1,000 points. The It was not until the early 1950s that the Dow Jones Industrial Average regained the point where it had been in late 1929. And so that for the parents of the baby boomers, the 1929 crash was a terrible experience, seared into their memory, followed by the Depression, and it made those people congenitally afraid of the stock market and very preoccupied with employment. Then you had the situation, the defining moment for the baby boomers was the great inflation, and it was really the taming of the great inflation in the 1970s that set the stage for the slow growth, low inflation 1980s, 1990s, which are exactly the sort of atmosphere in which stock investing thrives.
Now you say that the 1987 crash was paradoxically reassuring. How so?
Unlike the crash of 1929, it did not lead to a depression. It did not lead to a cataclysmic decline in the stock market. And the people who felt like fools in the aftermath of the 87 crash were the ones who had cut and run, the ones who had been able to get through to their brokers and had sold all their stocks or sold their mutual funds, because that market recovered every penny within 15 months and then kept going upward. And so instead of believing that even something as dramatic as a 500-point drop in one day was a bad event for the market, people just saw it as a blip on the radar screen and we just move right past it. And that ingrained this idea that ultimately the market will just go up. And so if it goes down, you buy on the dips and you don't cut and run. And it really reinforced something the fund industry and the brokerage community had been trying to say for a long time, which was, stay in the market because it will recover. And in that particular time, it really, really did. And that's the sort of subconscious memory, I think, that's driving a lot of stock behavior now.
I'd like you to each sum up for us some of your thoughts about the pros and cons of the middle class's heavy investment in the stock market now.
Well, I think that we've been perhaps stressing the negative too much. There are a lot of wonderful things about having a stock market boom, aside from the fact that everyone collects bigger checks at the end of the month. This has created an extraordinary vibrancy for the American economy. It has meant that all sorts of entrepreneurs and inventors have been able to get funding for biotech, high-tech, hospital care, and all sorts of other things. And so it has been a tremendous tonic for the stock market. My major fear is that people who have been investing in the stock market only since 1990 or since 1982 have experienced a very, very wonderful but extremely atypical period in financial history, and in the long run, it will revert to the norm. And I just hope that those people have not invested all of their life savings in the stock market and won't be rudely surprised as the tone in the market shifts.
Jonah, Sarah?
I also think it's a good thing that the stock market has been, as I like to call it, democratized. I mean, the stock market should not be just for insiders. It should not be for the wealthy. It should be something that the whole society participates in. It gives us all a stake in the economic well-being and health of the country. And I also think that it is a good way for us to have a chance to make our money, some of our money at least, grow faster than it would otherwise. We used to have a very paternalistic economic system where the government basically wanted your money in the bank, getting a regulated interest rates, primarily for the health of the bank, not for the health of your pocketbook. So the breakdown of that paternalism, I think, is a good thing. People should have the right to make their own choices and decisions about where they want to put their money. My view of it is that we are, as a society, as a middle-class society, still on a very steep learning curve about how to do this thing. It's not easy. It's a hard thing to do, to invest. And, we're learning at a kind of a weird time in the market's history where it has created the illusion that it's easier than it actually is, and you can make more than you probably can in the long run. And, I guess what I worry about is that we're going to learn the corrective of that in a harsh way. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but at some point, the market will teach people that it goes down as well as up.
Any final thoughts you want to add?
Well, I think that one important point to make is that there has been a rational basis for this stock market expansion over the last—
You're saying rational.
Basis for it, that we have had extremely low inflation. We have had strong, steady growth. It has been an ideal combination for the economy and also for stock market investors. What has developed in time, as Mr. Greenspan said, is an irrational exuberance based on those sound, rational underlying fundamentals. But it hasn't been completely a speculative mania. The speculation has, in fact, been intensified because there are some very good, sound reasons for investing in the stock market over the last 15 years.
So do you, this might be too personal, but do you have retirement money tied up in the market?
You betcha.
I do.
No, we both do. I mean, you know.
No, this is the thing. You're forced to play the game, as we've been saying. You can't not be in the stock market and expect to maintain your standard of living when you retire. So we're all forced into this crazy game, like it or not.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
We've enjoyed it too, Terry. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Terry.
Joe Nocera is the correspondent for the PBS Frontline documentary Betting on the Market, which will be broadcast Tuesday night. Ron Chernow is banking and finance historian interviewed on the program. He's the author of The House of Morgan. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.